Okay, welcome everybody to the Special Finance Committee, March 2nd. Amelia, can you call to order the meeting?
Yes, call to order.
No. I thought you were going to, I read it wrong. Do we have any comments from the public?
Can you admit herself somehow?
Of course, ma'am.
I'd like to confirm that there's no packet available. Is that true?
That is correct.
No.
Okay, so...
You're muted. Ask to unmute. Can you please call Michael's cell phone?
Admit. It's the same problem.
Birthday was Monday.
Just tell her to call herself.
For a dance recital that night.
It's the same problem. Can you just call his cell phone, please? Thank you very much. I will post the packet as soon as the meeting's over, Richard.
Hello, Vanessa.
Hi, can you hear me? You're going to have to mute there. Testing. Let me see.
Okay, so I can turn item number three, Mr.
Yes, good morning, Vanessa. You're going to give us an update on the audit?
Okay, I can hear you now. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Yes.
So how about giving us an update on the audit?
I can't hear, Martin.
Can you give us an update on the audit, please?
Is that what he just asked?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. This is Vanessa Burke, and I am the partner with the Poon Group. We have been working pretty sleepless nights lately. I know I have, trying to get all of the information that my team has worked on reviewed and ready for external audit. The external audit is slated to start on Monday of next week. We know that we will have, the CFD will be ready for them first thing. I know we've talked about the district being ready on Monday, actually before the CFD, but I actually got those both kind of coming together at the same time. And in communications with the audit partner, Ingrid Shipline, there are a couple areas that we know that we're getting information from, like an outside actuary, that we don't yet have, that we will be proposing entries for those after we've turned over the trial balance to her for audit. We will propose those to her, and she'll take those as client entry as opposed to an audit entry, just because we've already identified those issues as not issues, but that those numbers are pending update, waiting on external information. We've got that going on, and then the second area is the work on developer deposits. We hope to have that done by Monday, but we may need to follow that on, as well as some portion of capital assets. We'll have most of the core capital assets ready, but there are certain aspects of capital assets related to contributed capital that we're still working with your team on. So for all intents and purposes, we probably will start the audit. It doesn't mean that they'll come in, they're going to do a preliminary look, make sure things look ready to audit. We're going to basically turn our binder over to them and let them pull what they want from our binder and then start performing their test procedures on the account balances and on our work. There have been a number of entries that we've made to get the books and records ready. At the conclusion of this, my goal is to loop back with staff and go over kind of the list of adjustments we've had to post and try to get that corrected in 2021-22 so that we can start getting that year ready for audit. So with that, I mean, I think that's good news that we're moving forward with the audit. We're still a little bit of ways away. I would give the auditor about 60 days to kind of wrap everything up and get finished. That's just a normal time frame for a special district. Sometimes longer, sometimes less, depending upon your complexity. But for all intents and purposes, I think a 60-day time frame might work for them. Any questions, I'm happy to answer.
No, that's good news. We're making progress, almost to the finish line. That's great. Did you have something for us for the budget actual report? Did you work on that?
No, that'll be for me.
Oh, okay. So, go for it, Paula.
So we're going to go to budget actuals. I do have a...
So are we done with the... Do we need Vanessa to stick on the line? Is there something else?
That's all I had on the agenda that she was going to report on
today.
Yeah,
I think that might be it.
Okay. Vanessa, thank you. Can you... Oh, she can't hear me.
Martin said, thank you, Vanessa, if there's nothing else.
Are you going to go through the budget versus actual? Should I stay on for that?
She doesn't need to.
You don't necessarily need to.
I think we may have a roll coming forward, so I would be interested in listening in.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Here's the... I'll email you the packet once I've got it put together, Vanessa. And here's the budget version. Oh, too big. I hope you all can see it. No, I will print it up for everybody.
So we've provided the budget to actual by each fund. This is through quarter two, which is December 31st.
Excuse me, can we either cut her off or mute her?
Yeah, we can.
There's background noise coming across.
Yeah, mute.
Vanessa, I'm just going to hang up this, or I'm going to mute the cell for
mute.
Now.
Thank you, Michael. Sorry, Paul.
That's okay. So for the 100 fund, we have not booked any entries for property tax yet. We expect to do that fairly soon, and we'll have updated numbers for the committee and the board when we do have those entries done. Just want to have everybody keep in mind, as we walk through these, not all of our entries have been updated, so we have made some adjustments to account for those as we move forward with the monthly budget to ask actuals.
Oh, okay.
Just put the speaker back on. Speaker.
Moving into the revenues, not comparing the property tax, it looks like we're about on track with our title transfer fees and miscellaneous revenue. The expenditure side of the house, we're coming in at 17.68% of total budget spent for the first 6 months of the year. This essentially means we should be at 50%. So we're looking at all the entries that have not been made and trying to determine what expenses we've not included. We do know that there are some that are within the maintenance and repairs. We do have some other expenses that have not been included, and we'll have that hopefully updated by the March board meeting.
Oh, I should have told them to stay home.
Also, we have not done the administration allocation because we have not completed all of the entries. So for the March board meeting, we expect to have that mid-year update of what the administration allocation overhead will be for all of the other funds. Moving into the water fund. The water fund for revenues is about 50% through December 31st of 22, which is consistent with where we should be. We're looking at coming in probably right on target with those revenues. Then expenditures for the water fund overall, we're about 25%. And again, this is indicative of those entries that are missing, and staff are still working to get those plugged in and finalized so that we can have some better numbers for the March board meeting as well. Moving on to wastewater. Wastewater, again, revenues. We still have some entries that need to be made. We are only posting through Q2. We're missing some AR data for quarter one. We will have that updated for the March board meeting as well. With those numbers plugged in, we right now we're at 24.3%. We expect to be at the 50% mark by the once we get those entries plugged in for the March meeting. So just I want to have everyone keep in mind that this is a preliminary data that's not yet been finalized. Moving on to the expenditures, we also have some entry issues with our salaries and some of our expenses. So we're only at 20%, and we should be around 50%, if not a little bit more, especially with the wastewater expenses. Again, those entries will be included for the March board meeting. Moving on to drainage. Drainage is coming in a little bit under on the revenues. Right now, we're at 42% as of December 31st. We double-checked these entries, and all of the entries are in for drainage revenues. So it looks like we're going to be coming in a little bit under budget for drainage, and I'll talk about that a little bit later when we get into the year-end projection slides. Also, there's some allocation for salaries and the expenditures that haven't been completed yet. Essentially, what happens with our payroll is that everything is booked in the 200 fund, and then it is manually distributed out based on job costing activity to wastewater and drainage. And some of those entries have not been made because the full payroll has not been completed. Moving on to solid waste. Solid waste revenues are up to date. We're looking at coming in just slightly above where we should be at the mid-year mark. Expenditures, we're still behind in posting. One of the things that we're missing for the professional services is the Sac County landfill. That has, they just reached out to us to get 6 months worth of billing information from us. So we expect to see that invoice within the next couple of weeks. And when we get that paid out, that will hit, and you'll see significant changes in this, in the expenditure side. And then moving on to security. Security revenues are coming in slightly under budget. We did double check these revenues. All of the entries have been made for security, and we're coming in at about 43% at the end of December. So a lot of this is indicative of several past due accounts and those types of things. Moving on to the salaries. The salaries are up to date. We have some, I think, some distribution concerns. There's professional services, which is significantly higher than we had anticipated budgeting. So you'll see those high numbers, the 202%, 463%. The amount that we had budgeted for professional services is significantly less than what we actually have spent so far going into the 6 months. And again, those numbers will be updated for the March board meeting. And with that, that is the extent of the status for the budget to actuals at this point. Are there any questions?
I don't have it.
So do I understand correctly that by our March meeting, we should have a year-to-date covering the first two quarters of the fiscal year?
Correct.
Okay.
That's great.
It's hard to make anything of it if we're not complete, so we'll see something later.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I just wanted to have this prepared for the committee, and fortunately, due to time constraints, it's not as complete as we would like it to be. Staff spent a significant amount of time compiling the information to put it into this report. We're looking at developing some simplifying mechanisms to make it a little bit more streamlined for our input. There are several reports that we have to combine manually to get the information into this format, and that took a little bit more time than we had anticipated. And so the evaluation time frame for the entries was not as much as we would have liked.
So in that regard, Paula, is there a time frame when you anticipate that the system and the staff will be fully coordinated such that the board might begin to receive monthly year-to-date reports?
I do believe so. I think we need to get caught up on all of the revenue and expense entries. We've put a lot of, segregation of duties, internal controls processes in place over the last few months, and kind of fleshing out what those look like with our existing systems has taken a little bit longer than anticipated. And so I think once we get those processes established and implemented, it will be a much smoother reporting for us.
And I appreciate those comments. I recognize that we're dealing with transitioning from legacy systems to something more current, and also you're dealing with staff inexperience. But I think it's critical that we prioritize, and again, we're still waiting for the 2021 audit, as we discussed earlier. I think it's critical that we move quickly. Again, it's better to get it correct than quick, but I think leadership's reputation with the community and the confidence in the community is really dependent upon us getting these financials up to date. And I know you know that. I know I'm preaching to the converted in that regard, and I've certainly made that comment before. But, you know, I'm concerned we're entering in, and our next item is to talk about budget projections, and we're entering into budget deliberations and the potential, you know, for 218 notices, and we don't have current numbers. And I as a person that's going to be asked to approve a budget, I'm really struggling with how we're going to do that and be able to present to our community. I'm sure we need a rate increase. I hope we're going to have numbers that are adequate enough that we can share soon enough with the community so that we can get support for a needed rate increase. And I can't underscore, I can't overstate the importance of getting that. And I appreciate your efforts and those of the staff to get us there. I know you kind of started way behind, and we're doing a lot of catch up, but I don't know if there's any additional resources we can bring to bear or additional priorities that we can establish, because I mean, there's two or three critical issues facing this district. Oh, yeah. This is one of them.
Yeah, and we completely appreciate the predicament that we're in, you know, moving forward, asking for what may become a single-digit rate increase without having good, firm foundation of numbers. But we basically can only go as fast as we're going. And you know, Paula, you can share, what was your first week here at the district?
My first,
I mean,
day,
this will give us some perspective. Yeah.
If anybody wants to know what my life here has been for like almost 2 years, my first day was March 27th of 21. It was on a Sunday, and I worked 9 hours that day straight. And I had to put together the budget for the Wednesday board meeting presentation that day and the next few days, and then present it to the board, and basically flying blind and flying by the seat of my pants. And it's been kind of like that every day since. So it's...
Yeah, I think, you know, I appreciate the efforts that you have put in with the amount of turnover that you've had, with the amount of mess that we have to clean up here, you know, that's been caused over the last 4 or 5 years. It feels like we're headed in the right direction, and I do appreciate your efforts. What one key component that would really help us moving forward is getting that accounting manager, finding that accounting manager, getting that accounting manager hired, and I think that's going to help. The Prune Group has been very helpful in helping us get caught up, but I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's just that the challenge, Mr. Booth, is going to be this: what do we do this spring? And so we're going to have a call today to discuss that with one of our facilitators.
Well, I want to stress, I appreciate the effort that goes in. I'm not trying to be critical at all of the effort. I am a little concerned that I've been coming to these meetings regularly now for several months, and the presentation from the Poon Group representative is sounding like a broken record a little bit. We're working on it. We're going to have it soon. Isn't cutting it for me. And I don't know, again, what needs to change. I mean, talking about external numbers being needed on the 2021, budget year is really disheartening. I understand I'm the new guy. I haven't been here through all of it, but I am hearing kind of the same words uttered repeatedly month after month, and it's a little disheartening.
Can I go back over this budget to actual? I thought, maybe I'm mistaken, our goal was to do this quarterly as opposed to monthly, at least in the beginning. What's your understanding?
My understanding was that we were doing monthly budget to actuals with quarterly reporting.
That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the next one would be...
If I may, Dr. Pohl, on that, I appreciate staffing issues, limitations, but if revenues fail for some reason or expenses escalate for some reason and that information isn't brought to the board except quarterly, we can really fall behind quickly and maybe miss opportunities to make adjustments. Other organizations with which I have been affiliated, monthly year-to-date reports, and maybe they were larger, had more staff, but monthly year-to-date financial reports were provided to the board members and those other public entities on a regular basis, and maybe not immediately, but I hope that that is a fairly short-term goal for the district.
That was my understanding. That was this quarterly reporting was temporary.
Yes.
Okay.
But yeah.
Right.
Some yeah. Monthly just reporting is the gold standard, and that's what we're.
Right. Yeah, we're all in the same place.
We're
yeah.
moving towards there.
We're all in the same place.
And I think what's interesting, if I may, I completely underestimated the mess that Paul has had to clean up, and I hate going to Kahoff and saying we don't have your deposit yet. And, because they go through, they do the start doing the research, five other things weren't done correctly. It's really an exponential compounding hole, but we are starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And I appreciate everybody's patience. And, Paul, I really appreciate your work towards this.
Thank you.
And we're pretty much doing everything we can at this point.
It's a labor of love, so to speak.
Since you brought it up, tell me the status of the account manager recruitment.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so this afternoon I'm going to be meeting with MRG about having them do some headhunting activities for us. The standard recruitment that we typically undertake has not been fruitful. We've had a few candidates that we've interviewed preliminary, but they've just not met the minimum qualifications for the position, and so it's been a little bit disappointing. But I understand that this particular position is fairly challenging to recruit for right now. Sacramento County, City of Sacramento, West Sacramento, there's several other local agencies that are looking for the exact same position, and they may pay a little bit less, they may pay a little bit more, but ultimately it just boils down to we're competing with eight other job advertisements for the same role. So I think for us, because of the time that we don't have to really go into the recruiting process full force to get the right quality candidates, we're going to be discussing with MRG to have them take that role and responsibility over. They'll collect the candidates, they'll vet them, they'll send us the best of the best, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, speaking with other business owners and HR folks in a variety of settings, we're not unique in that regard in terms of trying to recruit folks for critical positions. I've never seen the market like this. And not only that, then you compound that with a lot of folks who either were in the job, you know, market during the pandemic or were first entering it, and their expectations about reporting for work and hours of work are very different than I grew up with in my blue-collar family, you know, and even professional-level folks. Both of my sons are business owners, and they just bemoan the fact that job applicants want to negotiate everything before they even show up for an interview practically. I think it's wise to try to employ somebody that maybe can reach out with resources.
Yes.
So fingers crossed that we can fill
I'm very
that position.
Hopeful.
And my wife manages courts, and she hires people, and they can't retain them. Either they want to leave or they're not performing. So it's a real challenge, and I don't envy you trying to fill that position, but it's a critical one for us. So
absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to the next one, the budget projections.
Okay, so let's move on to the budget projections. So these are going to look a little bit different than the mid-year. A lot of this, so essentially what happened is staff and I broke it into two pieces. Staff worked on the monthly cost for the mid-year projections, and then I worked on the year-end projections. So I can probably speak a little bit better about the numbers on these. So, and also, water and wastewater are not included in this. I did not have the time to get to it, unfortunately, and so I'm only able to present the administration, drainage, solid waste, and security for today. However, they will be completed for the March board meeting for discussion at that point. So we do expect to probably have slightly more than $775,000 in property tax income coming in this year. However, I'm keeping the projection as is until we have a little bit more information as far as the dollars coming in. Even still, it looks like with our other revenues, we're still coming in short by about 2% by the end of the year. I think if the property tax comes in higher, then we'll come in above that. Salaries are down because of that accounting manager position vacancy. However, our professional services are double what we had anticipated. And a lot of this has to do with hiring temporary staffing, contract staffing, consulting contracts, and so on to assist us with getting everything back on track. This is what it's going to look like, and the professional services expenses for the year-end projection is a conservative guess. That's my best conservative guess based on my knowledge of all of our existing contracts and what we expect to expend by the end of the fiscal year for administration. So I do want to draw your attention to that. It is 20% higher than what we had anticipated for the original budget, and we're definitely keeping an eye on what these costs are going to look like for the remainder of the year. Some of them will dissipate. We have hired two of our temporary staffing. You know, ultimately, it's kind of a trade-off. We pay more for them through Robert Half and Apple One than we would if they're hired here. And we have contract cost buyouts as well associated with a couple of those hires. Not significant dollars, but just enough to have a little bit of impact on the professional services. So that would be my major concern for administration for the year-end projections.
Paula, yes. I have a quick question.
Sure.
If I may. So this professional services year-end projection, I'm assuming, you know, we were not thinking about hiring the Poon Group when we put this budget together.
That's correct.
That's something that said, okay, we really need help.
Yeah, that's essentially the budget had already been done.
I wasn't part of that at that point.
Right. So a little bit of background on that. When we had contracted originally with Ide Bailey in June, the budget had already been completed. And at that point, the additional expense to the district was $167,000. And Ide Bailey chose to disengage. And the contract that we have now with the Poon Group is a time and materials. So it's a bit different than the specific contract that we had with Ide Bailey.
It has no not to exceed amount.
It does not, no.
I guess the skeptical side of me says maybe that's why we're not getting completed. I hope I'm wrong.
I wasn't a part of that contract.
So I can, if there are no questions on admin, I can move on to drainage. Okay, moving on to drainage, it looks like we're going to be coming in about 2% less than what we had anticipated as well for our revenues this year. We are continuing with property tax subsidy. Ultimately, with the property tax subsidy, because we budgeted that allocation for each of the funds to help offset some of the deficits, those will not change unless the board provides direction to change them. So you'll see that if you look down at the bottom of drainage, it puts us at a $42,654 deficit with our projections for the expenses. Expenses are coming in about $20,000 high. We're coming in $20,000 short with revenues. So that's where the deficit is coming in, even with that $89,000 subsidy from the property tax. So this is something that will need to discuss at the board level about the year-end projections and how we want to subsidize the funds with property tax, or if we do. I think the problem that we have at this point is we don't have the fund balance amounts yet, and until we get the fund balance amounts, we really won't know how much we're dipping into our unrestricted fund balance for each of these funds. So this is a discussion point for the board. I see a question coming. No?
No.
Okay.
Well, the question is when will we have those fund balances, I guess.
Yes, and we've asked the Poon Group for those too. I can follow up with them and get that. Moving on to,
you can tell her when you talk to her I rolled my eyes at that answer, okay?
I think she's on the phone.
She can hear. I think she can hear. So solid waste, you know, again, I think we already knew solid waste would come in as at a deficit because of the impacts from SB 1383. Here I have it projected at about a $189,000 deficit. This is due in part with the Cal Waste contract has that increase. We've got 2 years of increases on Cal Waste without being able to spread that to the residents. You know, we are a pass-through, and 21, 22, and current fiscal year are the same rates. And just a little bit of background, Director Booth. I know you weren't here for these discussions. But essentially what Cal Waste had been doing is providing the district with a preliminary rate sheet in February or March each calendar year for the next fiscal year. And ultimately what occurred with the very first budget that I did for 21-22, I used the preliminary rates because that's what was provided at the time. And then in June of 21, they came back with a final rate sheet and had increased the rate. So our Prop 218 had already passed. So we were already entering the year as into a deficit. And so we had 21-22 as a deficit because of that final rate sheet coming through after we'd passed our Prop 218 and the budget. And then subsequently with the Prop 218 protest success of last year for current fiscal year, so we've had 2 years of stagnant rates. So that's why we're seeing that significant deficit in the on the expenditure side. So moving forward with solid waste, the intent now that the contract has been renegotiated is that they're only allowed to increase the contract by the solid waste group CPI increase annually, and that will be a separate Prop 218 that we'll be issuing at the March board meeting. So there will be a catch-up with those rates. Essentially, we're a pass-through, and we're just passing on our costs to the customers.
How much more do we know yet? How much more we have to raise solid waste?
I just received those last week from them. I haven't had a chance to look at it. Essentially, the way the contract was written is that they look at February to February, which put us in a March, and I requested that they look at January CPI so that we could get the rates sooner and in a more timely manner that allowed staff to prepare it, and I still didn't get it until last week, so I haven't had a chance to really evaluate what the percentage of increase is. I suspect if it's been a 10% increase year over year, I'm hoping that the solid waste group CPI increase isn't much more than that.
Plus there's contract increases besides CPI, right?
There are no contract increases. Annually, what the district has negotiated is just the, or are you referring to the Sac County contract?
No, the contract has specific dates and what the increase is going to be aside from CPI.
I believe the provision in that, I did check with Andrew on that, the provision of that part of the contract is for discussion. They can't put forth those without it going to board for approval. So we're moving forward with just an annual CPI increase.
We know what they want. They've told us what they want.
Correct.
And we approved the contract.
Yes.
So why would it go to the...
Anything above and beyond the CPI increase would go to the board for approval for Cal Waste.
Yeah, but we're stuck with it.
True.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. So... Do we know? Okay. Well, I guess we'll find out when you do the budget what increase is necessary.
So, Paul, is that a separate 218 process for the solid waste?
Yes. Solid waste is a separate Prop 218 process. Essentially, we are a pass-through, and we don't benefit from any of the charges that we levy on residents. So that's a separate process.
And I think there's a communication opportunity there. I know I'm getting a lot of pushback, and I'm reading things blaming, if you will, CSD for the state law regarding organics. And I'm all the time saying, look, CSD had nothing to do with that. It's a state law, and you're not the only ones that are dealing with that. And I don't, depending on what index is relied upon, 12-month CPI index January 22 through January 23 was about 6.5%. little lower than we saw the preceding year or so. So that's a little sign of potential relief, but that's still not great news, right?
Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions on solid waste?
No.
Okay. Moving on to security. It looks like security is going to come in about as anticipated, with a little bit slightly over existing revenues projected. I'm looking at about $40,000 increase. Some of this is in part with some corrections to the commercial security fees that we've done, with the increase in the new commercial businesses that have recently opened. We're seeing that increase in that revenue there that we had not anticipated. Also, the late fees and penalties are projected to be in slightly higher than what we had anticipated in the original budget. Some of the salary data is missing for administration, but that will be corrected for the March board meeting as well. Part is mostly the benefits. There were some benefits costs that had been incorrectly posted to a different fund, and so we've worked on correcting that. It was just not corrected for this sheet. And then moving down to the end, again, we have significant costs in professional services. The expenditures for the gate and the patrol is primarily ABA costs to have external security services. And we had anticipated not spending that much. However, because we've had vacancies and I believe COVID hit all at once for many staff, so we had significant coverage gaps that we needed to fill using ABA. And then, again, you'll note with this fund, there is a transfer in of property tax of slightly under $415,000. Because that is board approved, that remains the same. However, with the security fund, we will have a net annual activity of a negative $161,398. So again, this is something that we'll have to take into consideration at the board discussion in March on how the board would like to move forward with the property tax subsidy and if they want to increase, decrease, leave the same, so on.
So, Paul, I'm confused, especially with regard to the expenditures for security patrol. If we have three vacant positions, I believe is the number I heard last, and we're paying such high numbers to the professional services for outside guard coverage, why is our year-end projection higher than the budget for patrol?
For salaries, I would say that one position is vacant, one position was never funded. Actually, I believe two of the patrol positions were not funded. The sergeant was frozen. There was no salary savings there. So essentially, we're kind of struggling with that. We did not budget salaries that we hadn't anticipated filling positions for.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So it looks like we're...
That doesn't sound right to me. The budget... My understanding of the budget was that you budgeted for the authorized positions. And now we've frozen some positions.
Correct.
Why wouldn't the projection be lower?
Same question I had, yeah.
I can go back and take a look at the numbers and make sure that we haven't double booked anything. There is a possibility that could have happened. So yeah, I can double check it.
Yeah, I just, with all the exigencies, I can't understand why we'd be $43,000 over budget. As Dr. Pohl just said, if you've staffed to budget authorized positions and not all of those are filled, there ought to be a salary savings. Not an expenditure of over $43,000 above your budgeted amount.
Yeah, Paul will take another look at that.
Absolutely.
I'm sure there's a good explanation that we can provide. I definitely see your logic.
Absolutely, understood. Are there any other questions for the year-end projections?
No. Okay, where are we at? So we're on to number five, Prop 218 discussion.
Yes, so essentially this is just a quick discussion about the process that we're going to be undertaking for Prop 218 this year. We will be issuing separate notifications for water, wastewater, and solid waste. Drainage and security are not subject to Prop 218, so we will just create the budgets with the 2% annual increase, and that will be part of the regular budget development process and discussion. For Prop 218, we are looking at doing an initial presentation at this board meeting coming up in March, and then scheduling a special meeting at the end of March if there are additional decisions that need to be made and finalized. So that would be the plan that we have for the Prop 218 process this year.
The only thing I would add to that is we also, we're probably going to be creating some special meetings, you know, for the community. And we have a call today at 3:30 to discuss that process and how we want to set that up and how we want to roll that out and get the word out.
What's the timeline for that? Is that before we issue the notice or after?
Well, when do we issue the notice, Paula?
I believe we have to issue the notice by March 30th.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's...
So we have a really tight turnaround.
It's super tight turnaround.
Yeah, but I'm thinking it makes more sense to have a community meeting, maybe a town hall format like we're doing on Integrated Water Master Plan, subsequent to the 218 notices, but as early in that review process as we can so we can address and answer questions. I don't know that it would be necessarily fruitful to do it before March 30th unless we thought we wanted to share preliminary thoughts on it before the 218 notices. I just don't know if that leaves us enough time to analyze and make adjustments before the March 30 deadline for the notices. So I think it makes more sense to schedule the town hall early in April as we can. Michael, what do you
think?
That's
what I'm thinking. And I'm thinking, you know, it would be nice, you know, if I had my wish, you know, we'd have everything ready and then we could have that town hall meeting before the 218 went out, but that's just not the reality that we have. So I think I'm more in agreement with you about having it sometime in April. And we can discuss that today on the call.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, about the Tyler timeline for training?
So, along with all of the fun budget stuff we have going on, we have completed our utility billing process cycle for this week, and during that time frame, we did two new data polls. Staff have spent a lot of time cleaning up the data in the utility billing accounts over the last 6 months. And the initial data pull back in August for Tyler had a lot of errors in it, and so we've corrected the majority of those moving forward with some of the accounts. And ultimately, with the two data pulls, now I have to go through and test the data. So they've run the bills, they've run our utility billing within the new utility billing module in Tyler, and I will be testing 10 commercial, 10 residential. I did a 2.5-hour walkthrough with the configuration project manager, and we just kind of spot checked just to kind of keep an eye out of what I should be looking for. And we identified some transmission issues between our data and the data that is read by the Tyler team. And so we have some significant challenges, particularly with the owner-tenant relationships in our existing system versus the owner-tenant landlord relationships in the new system. And so there's some things that they're going to have to work out with our data. Ultimately, the testing will continue into next week and the following week, and we're getting staff set up in the system so that they can, once we get the data configuration complete and the system reads the data from Utility Star correctly in Tyler, staff will start beginning training for an April 1 implementation. So there's very tight turnaround, lots of testing, lots of staff time, and to make sure that we're bringing over accurate data and keeping the accurate data within the new system.
So you ran two systems simultaneously?
Yes.
And how did the bottom line turn out?
It went okay.
I mean, within 5% or something like that?
I would say so, yeah. Yeah, there weren't errors fiscally. It was more errors of information transferring over who's the owner, who's the landlord. We had, of the ones that we tested, especially with the tenant issues, there were, out of all of the tenant accounts, there were only two that didn't transfer over, and there's something that their system kicked back. So
it's the text, not the dollars?
It's, yes.
Dollars were good.
Dollars were good.
Oh, well.
Dollars were good for the ones that came over. So
we might not know who the dollars belong to if the text doesn't transfer.
Okay.
So in an owner-tenant relationship, the tenant is responsible for the bill. Does the owner ultimately assume responsibility if the tenant defaults?
They do, yes.
Okay.
And they both get the bill each month.
Okay. I leased a property here for a year, many years ago. I don't remember writing the check to CSD, but I'm sure I did.
Yes.
Because I'm sure the owner would not have let it go to her.
We do have owners that do pay for their tenants' bills, specifically when they move out.
Yeah.
You know, we've had a lot of when they transfer the tenant.
I know we had that one case where that was an issue recently that you dealt with.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. So far, so good. I still have to continue my testing. I should be done by the end of this week. And I've reported several ticket issues for them to fix, but for the most part, everything looks really good. A lot of the information transferred over seamlessly, which is great. It's just particularly the owner-tenant relationships that are the problem.
Why won't you do one more round of simultaneous billing?
We will. We'll do one more round at the end of March before we go live.
Oh, okay. So I thought you said this goes live the 1st of April, but you're acting it'd be the... The real one from Tyler goes out in...
It would go out in April. So essentially what the timeline looks like is we do the initial round of testing with the dual billing, make the corrections found that I'm finding in the errors. I believe Yolanda Pauly will be working on it next week as well, checking for any errors that I didn't identify. And then after that, we're doing staff testing. Once we get all of that information into the Tyler team, they'll review it, they'll make the corrections, we'll run another billing cycle, dual billing cycle, in both Utility Star and Tyler, and make sure that it's seamless and everything ticks and ties, and then we go live. And then the following month will be a billing sent through the Tyler system.
Wow. In which month is Tyler only going to be running?
It will be the April 25th billing.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's good. Is it easier to use?
I think it's user-friendly. I've used their systems before in previous employment, and I've been very happy with the technology. It's very robust. I think the challenge for us with this particular district is that, you know, our application of our account structure has not been done consistent, and in some ways it's overly complex, and so creating a crosswalk from the old system to the new system so that we can capture everything correctly is where the challenge is, because we want to uncomplicate some of these items. And then we also, I'll give you an example of one of the things where we didn't complicate things, or we could have done them better. In the Utility Star system, we have the base charge, and the Utility Star system uses a tiered structure on how each of the funds get paid. And for the water fund, I'll talk about the water fund. The water fund has a reserve amount, and so instead of creating the correct revenue code, it sends it to a generic revenue code, and then we have to manually piecemeal it out and break it out based on the number of homes and the dollar amount. And for me, it's very difficult to reconcile that correctly, because if you're looking at what you should be collecting and how much you collected versus what we've actually broken out manually based on this other complicated calculation, it would have just been easier and correct to do it in the system in the first place and split it out that way. So those are the types of things that we're doing with this new system so that we have more accurate reporting.
And has all the staff been trained?
They've not been trained.
When's that going to happen?
That's going to take place probably in the next couple of weeks. Everybody has been set up on the system. They should have already received emails from Tyler with password logins to reset. And once they're in the system, they'll be in the test environment, and we'll have specified training times set aside so that they can walk through with the project team, understand what it is that they're testing, how they need to test it, and what type of results we're looking for.
Have you got the training yet?
Yes.
How many people are getting trained?
Six.
Oh, everybody.
Everybody's getting training.
Okay. Great. Okay. Let's talk about the... Go ahead.
If you're done with this item, could we step back to item 5, the Prop 218 process, for a minute? No?
Go ahead.
Oh. My immediate reaction sitting here, like I say, immediate reaction, I think it would be a mistake not to have the meeting before the notice goes out. Speaking as a ratepayer, you're getting that notice in the mail, and they haven't asked me anything. Then my reaction to that would be very negative. I suspect if you have the meeting, you might not hear what you want, but on the other hand, as a ratepayer, too bad. I mean, I really realize that you need rate increases, but I want to tell you something. I want to come to that meeting, and I want to tell you something. And I think a lot of other people do, too.
Except the Prop 218 notice is a maximum we can have.
Yeah,
and the final budget is the one that really counts.
Yeah, really.
Right?
True.
And so you're going to have input on that.
I'm sorry. I said I'm sorry. I was about to interrupt you.
Well, all I'm saying is if we don't do it before the notice, people won't be able to tell us, but it doesn't seem physically possible for us to do that. But
yeah.
But they will have input on the final budget, and that's what we're contemplating.
On the final budget.
And I think maybe there's an opportunity here again, if we think about it, if concurrent with the 218 notice, which establishes the maximum possible increase, if we also announced a town hall meeting to discuss the rate increase, then maybe that'll lessen a little bit some of the negativity or the shock. So you'll say, hey, here's what we're proposing as a potential, and we're going to give you all a chance to come talk to us about it before we make a final decision. I think that might assuage some of the concern. I think it's a valid one. That's why I was sitting here earlier.
Well, I still question that, because whenever is there a rate increase, a proposed rate increase, and it's not the maximum amount? I mean, maybe there are some, but I think there would be, I mean, I would certainly doubt it, and I think a lot of people in the district would doubt it. You know, once this gets approved, hey, that's what it's going to
be. And I understand, and if nothing else, at least the town hall will be an opportunity for us to explain how we had derived at the proposed rate increase, which from my perspective, recalling the discussion last year where there was, as you recall, huge increase, and I sat in this very room and questioned, you know, the 60% reserve that was being proposed. And I didn't feel like I had, as a just a member of the community, an adequate opportunity to ask the questions and have them answered. So at a minimum, I'm hoping we can do that. It's a dicey proposition because of the legal restrictions and just our temporal restrictions right now. So I think we need to have a mind to how do we maximize the opportunity wherever it occurs for the community to come in and engage, have their questions answered. We should be able to defend whatever rate increase is being proposed, and we should be able to calmly persuade our community to accept it.
Well, I think
ideally. I may be too much of an optimist, but ideally, that's how it ought to work.
Well, that's nice, and I think you make some good points. But, you know, historically speaking, people have come up here, the board hasn't listened, they have not responded, and nothing. I mean, it's mind-blowing. I mean, the board did polls that said the security tax would fail, and yet the board went ahead and did it. I mean, it's you know, I have little, no offense intended, but I have little faith in this board. I know you're a new person, and I think a lot of people in the community have little faith in this board. I mean, they were going to do a 350% increase in security for the village. They didn't even shrug their shoulders. They were going to spend $1 million to dredge Laguna Joaquin. I mean, and then who's going to pay for that? They didn't even question that. So, I mean, I think you need to listen. Let people speak. I don't know whether you'll listen or not, but
I want to assure you it's a new day and we're employing new techniques. I am the new guy and I'm pushing really hard because I have those same conversations in the community. Before I decided to ask to be appointed to this board, I talked to dozens and dozens of people. What's your perception about what we can do to change things? And this community outreach is number one priority that I've been told by my friends and acquaintances. So obviously the proof is in the pudding. And let's continue to make those a priority. I think we're in sync on that discussion point.
Well, that was my quick reaction sitting there.
Appreciate it.
But it might be a mistake not to have the hearing.
Pardon me for monopolizing, Martin.
No, thank you. Let's go on to the RFP for the 5-year rate study.
So essentially, just a quick update, we're planning on issuing that RFP within the next, RFP within the next couple of weeks to get consultants on board for a 5-year rate study. Also included in this, I believe we're planning on putting together a secondary one for capital improvement plan.
Yeah.
But are we doing that at the same time?
That's probably some discussion. I think there's probably some benefit to having both of those in the same RFP because a lot of the firms, consulting firms, you know, they can do both. Mm-hmm. Like we mentioned the other day, HDR. You know,
right.
They do a really good job on capital improvement programs, engineering company, they do rate studies. I think we're better off looking for that type of model than just going with some accounting firm that doesn't know about infrastructure.
Right.
Because either a rate study, that's not rocket science. A rate study, you know, that's something that they can put together, but they really need to understand infrastructure. That's the key.
Yeah.
I would propose writing it then as an alternate, either or both. Mm-hmm. And let companies, if they want to do just one. I did that with some stuff at RT, and it gave me some flexibility as a decision maker. It may well be that the best bid is a company that wants to do both. Mm-hmm. But if you had a really good company that wanted to do one but not the other and vice versa, I think if you propose it as an alternate, you can bid, you know, the two basic components, you can bid either or both. Or maybe bid, you know, separately and together, however. But I've seen RFPs like that, and I think it might be, again, since we're having trouble getting companies to bid and respond to things, I think the more flexibility that we can exercise, it might be a model, Paula, that would benefit us.
We definitely need to get CIP done first.
Yes.
I mean, that has to happen. I'm open to you know, doing an alternate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about the cost allocation?
That's going to be a separate engagement.
I mean, same. Is it a separate RFP? You mean?
It would be, yes.
These things, the people that do the five-year rate study don't do cost allocation.
And that's a good question.
You know, I think some do, some don't. You know, we'd had several conversations with external consulting companies recently that do cost allocation plan. They don't necessarily go hand in hand with the rate study, but they could. So that could be another option to do an alternative, all in one, separate. I had planned on doing a separate engagement.
I thought, based on previous discussions, Paula, we had determined we were going to move forward with that right away. We thought we had somebody lined out at a cost that we could authorize without further
Was that ClearSource?
It was. I think it was doing a refresh with ClearSource.
And that's not been pursued?
And I think there was some, wasn't there some...
The timing issues.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember why we didn't do that.
I think it was a timing issue, yeah.
Timing issue related to...
Yeah, they needed time to do it.
Plus, yeah, they needed like 3 months to flesh it out.
Yeah.
And we needed it for next year's budget, so I think that just kind of got pushed back.
You know, I think part of the communication on this to a team process is, you know, really transparency that, yeah, we need some now and here's why, and then yes, we are going to be looking at a five-year rate study because, you know, there's some serious decisions that this community is going to have to make. You know, if we continue to bleed out of our reserves fixing infrastructure, we're going to run out of money. And, you know, people need to know what happens. If you implode, LAFCO assigns you to Sac County, and then you lose all your local control. So I think that, in a large effect, the transparency that, yes, we're going to be asking for some now because we need some now with that justification, and yes, there's going to be a five-year process coming up so we can make sure that Rancho Murrieta is set up adequately for the future.
Have we... received any names of firms that we want to send this to?
HDR being one of them, you might have a few. I mean, we would just want to blanket it. We're just going to send a bunch out. And CH2M Hill, they do good CIP work.
How about some of the consultants we're using right now? Do they have any ideas?
Oh, we can tap Vanessa to see if she has some ideas as well.
How about Lucy?
Yeah, Lucy might have some people that she works with as well. Yeah, we'll compile a good list and cast a pretty wide net. I mean, I think this is definitely one of the things I think we want to go big firm with. This is kind of a big firm experience.
We really need to have the longevity and expertise in this type of a study, especially when it's unprecedented for the district to go down this path, and we really need to have someone that's going to really do the deep dive and get us what we need so that we can take the district, you know, in a better direction moving forward.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think in terms of the community acceptance of a five-year plan, the bona fides of the entity performing that study become really important.
Yeah.
The goal is to have this before February of next year? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be done, right?
It would be great to have it completed by January, so we would have that ready for our 24-25 fiscal year. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it'd be too much of a push to get it done before January.
Yeah.
And are we going to tell them that they may want to look into our Integrated Water Master Plan for goals of it?
Yeah, I mean, that'll be part of the update for infrastructure, along with everything else that we have.
Okay.
You know, without the integrated master plan, whatever infrastructure comes out of that will just be added to our capital improvements plan.
Okay.
Amongst the various about other things.
Okay. Let's go on to security staffing.
Pull up that spreadsheet.
So essentially, we have six scenarios here, looking at the fiscal 23-24 budget for security. Ultimately, the discussion today is really about looking at what the committee wants to move forward with as far as subsidizing property tax to the board and what that looks like with funding security and at what level of staffing we would move forward with.
I have no idea what's on the board up there.
He's bringing it.
Okay.
So essentially, the breakdown of what this is moving forward with fiscal year 24 is budgeting 18 fully funded staffing. With
Thank you.
The assumption that the admin allocation remains the same, which we know it won't, and then with the 2% increase of the Measure J revenue that we anticipate collecting by the end of fiscal year 24. So ultimately, what that looks like, what the subsidy from property tax would be, and then the available property tax allocation remaining that the board could choose to allocate elsewhere. And so I can walk you through these. Scenario one would be a total of 15 employees, and you would see the subsidy needed from property tax would be $312,000 approximately. Scenario two would be 14. And that would require $185,000 subsidy from property tax. And as you go through these, you'll see that the property tax subsidy becomes less. And then scenario four and five allows a slight surplus in revenue against expenditures.
I have a question.
Yes.
Real quick. Booth, you had it looks like you had a question.
No, go ahead. It'll hold.
Just the difference between scenario two and scenario three, it seems like it's only a $50,000 difference.
It is. That would be the reduction of two part-time staff.
Oh, okay, so that makes it for that.
Correct.
Nonlinear.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paula.
Uh-huh.
Is a consultant involved in these numbers?
No.
Is the sheriff?
No.
So.
Oh, I'm sorry. I take that back. You're referring to consultant as far as ABA?
Mm-hmm.
No, the assumption is that there is no ABA contract to backfill. So they're not included in this.
Okay.
Includes part-time.
And the expenses for each one of these scenarios kind of based on the top number there?
Yes. So ultimately...
Are some of our costs more fixed rather than variable based on...
The fixed costs are essentially the salary and benefits. The salary and benefits costs that the assumptions that I...
I'll get to.
Okay, no problem.
The assumptions that were made for the salary and benefits costs anticipates collective bargaining, new agreement effective January 1 of 2024. The current contract expires December 31st of 23. We also have increased health care costs associated with PERS. Annually, it goes up about 10% depending on the medical provider that the staff chose. So there's those that are based on assumptions, but then the fixed costs are the ones that we know about, which is how many employees we have and what their annual costs are.
So based on your year-to-date budget or the... Would you think that administrative allocation would go up or down?
I think the administration allocation is going to go up. I'm not just not sure how much.
Yes, she is.
I need to do more evaluation on the administration fund for year end. We need to look at admin. There are some costs that need to be reclassified that were included in the monthly budget to actuals and the year end projections report. So again, you know, we're not perfect with our entries, and I can't state how much that admin allocation will be for next fiscal year.
Your year-end projection said we're supposed to be pretty close to the budget.
We're pretty close.
So that would make you think that the administration allocation has got to be close too, right?
It should be close. I can't speak to what the specific number would be. I will tell you, when I did the analysis for the administration fund, in the budget, I had split out the GSRMA costs. And one of the things that we should have been doing but weren't is that GSRMA, the general liability, the AD&D, you know, it's based on employee. And one of the things that we have been doing and should not have been doing is we charge it all to admin and then use the administration allocation to piecemeal it out. When we have the actual cost, then we have the knowledge of what that is per employee, per fund. And so for this particular budget, I split all of that out. Unfortunately, it didn't translate when we paid the bills because we pay it quarterly. So everything was charged directly to the administration fund. So I do believe that some of this is going to change for admin. I just can't speak to how much it is. That's just one of the reclassification that I'm aware of.
Without getting into detail and some separate, and I wasn't able to attend Security Committee today, I've posed some questions to Kelly and Michael, maybe have shared with President, maybe some questions about our scope of responsibility relative to Measure J and some of the enforcement services that we're providing in enforcing RMA rules. Is there any analysis underway to address those questions that I've raised so that we might be in a position to talk about some alternate scenarios in that regard at budget time?
Well, go ahead, Kelly.
We do have, once we get this budget information, we wanted to sit down with the general managers and a couple of our board members and renegotiate our contract with the RMA. It hasn't been updated since the year 2000. So that's one of the things that's on our back burners to address those issues. Absolutely.
And part of what we need to know is what's going to be our funding level for security before we have that conversation with them. Mm-hmm. Because there may be some things we just can't do.
Well, and that I think is the key. And again, this is not probably the appropriate venue to raise those specific questions that I had. But reading the language in Measure J and comparing that to some of the reported services that Kelly's department is providing, I wonder, and I'm posing it as a question, I wonder whether we have been providing and maybe have we've evolved so that we've assumed additional responsibilities at the district that maybe are beyond our legal obligation under Measure J. And with funding being tenuous at best, it may be an opportune time to analyze that scope of responsibility legally versus some of those. Now, I could be completely wrong, but historically I've been pretty good at analyzing those kinds of things. So we will have an opportunity at some point then to engage in more detailed discussion on those points.
Richard?
Yeah, I aren't there serious questions about the legality of using property tax money for security? I have an article on my kitchen table. I haven't read it in months, but there was a board meeting where that issue was discussed, and from what that article was saying, that it is clearly illegal to use property tax money. Like I say, I haven't read it in a few months, but it seemed to be clearly illegal to use property tax money to subsidize security. I don't remember the reason, but that seemed to be the consensus, and the article seemed to be saying clearly illegal. And that's, I got the impression that Tim maybe says, hey, we're not going to do it anymore. And I got the impression that was the reason. I mean, I can give you a copy of the article. Maybe I'm totally wrong about my recollection, but
you know, I'm raising the question. We don't do much around here without legal representation.
Oh.
And we've done it over and over and over every time we adopt a budget. And we have a council here every meeting. So
okay,
I'm not too worried about it.
Okay. Are you aware of what I'm talking about?
No.
I'm not either, but I know that discussions that I have heard, the concept that the board has looked at before I joined was living within the means of Measure J, whether that's a legal restriction or just an administrative decision of the board, realizing that we have a lot of other priorities for which we could use the property tax money. I think that's what I have heard in the brief time that I've been here, and I'm sort of amplifying that discussion beyond that. Assuming we're going to live within the means of Measure J, are we providing services beyond that scope? And if we are, do we want to either discontinue those services or charge for them and provide additional revenue into the security department that, you know, so we don't have to use property tax to subsidize security? That's my thinking moving forward as a committee member and a board member.
But to answer your question about the property taxes are considered general fund dollars. And general fund dollars can be used to subsidize other non-general fund or general fund activities if those funds fall in a deficit. So it's not an illegal use of the property tax fund because they are considered general fund.
Okay.
Flip side of that coin would be we can't use Measure J funds.
Correct.
For anything other than security because
Correct.
Those are special or designated funds.
Correct.
So the flip side of the coin is not true.
That's correct. So okay. You would see, so water and wastewater, drainage and solid waste are enterprise funds because they're activities related to utilities and services. And drainage and security are special taxes. Special taxes dollars can only be used on special taxes. Enterprise funds can only be used on enterprise funds. There are very significant limitations on what you can do, and that requires an interfund loan that has to be paid back if you do that. So typically general fund dollars, which are primarily property taxes or any other transient occupancy tax or licensing and franchise fees, those types of things, those will be general fund dollars that agencies can use to subsidize other funds to assist with ensuring that they maintain the level of services that they need for to assist the public.
Yeah, I understand that. But I'll give you a copy of this article if I can find it. I'm pretty sure I can find it. And it was referring to a particular board meeting where this was discussed. And this article was saying that's what they concluded.
Okay, thank you. So the purpose of this discussion is to give some direction to staff to start the budget process, knowing how much property tax might go to other departments or to reserves or wherever. And so my thought was, and we'll discuss it, is that I don't think we should go past a $50,000 deficit.
So that's somewhere between what, scenario 3 and 4?
Yep.
Yep.
And the board as a whole is going to be able to chime in on this once they see a budget, and that's not going to be very far off. It's just a starting point for staff to prepare a budget and then the board to weigh in on it.
So for clarification, Martin, you're saying no more than a $50,000 variance or shortfall?
Yeah,
he's looking at shortfall.
Just suppose
deficit.
Scenario 3 had a negative 50,000. That's the one that's the level I'm comfortable with. But the idea of this is to live within our means of Measure J. Because there's a lot of other uses for that money, especially infrastructure and reserves. And that, I think that's important to...
So question for Kelly. At a staffing scenario 3 level of 13 staff, what does that look like in terms of staffing the gate and providing patrol?
That's almost what we have now. We have 8 full-time gate security officers, we have 2 part-time on the gates, and then we have 3 in patrol with myself. That's exactly what we have now, and we're short. We're short at least 2 patrol officers. That's right where we are now.
But that's also the... removes 2 part-time gate officers.
What does that remove?
It says so in scenario 3.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I wonder... Yeah.
They don't get benefits, though, the part-time people. They just get the cash.
Right.
So very close to where you're at now.
Very close, but to keep those gates, you don't have enough people as it is when they start going on vacation, they start going on sick, and then that's where they were talking about doing the unmanned kiosks.
Right.
So you start to... We rely on those 2 part-time people to fill in. And we've always relied on patrol. We've had 5. Now we're down to 3 and me. So yeah, it's tight, but it's something will happen, and a gate will end up being left open. It could happen.
Well, I don't think it's sustainable to always use you to be covering patrol.
Well, still, even then, people are days off. Like this exact last week, for example, we lost 2 people. We only have 3 patrol. We lost 2 of them to a sickness out there. And that spread very quickly, and they exposed themselves.
So you weren't able to open the gates at Stonehouse Park on time.
But
there's a question right there. Is that our responsibility, or since RMA runs the park, is it their responsibility? I mean, are the kinds of questions.
I also think, too, though, if you just take out the citations and stuff we do, just our security checks alone, I think I brought this up the last meeting, they're roughly equal, 33 to 32 sites we have to check. That's your first hours of check of duty, just checking everything at least one time. That's kind of equal. Then we go from there. And our calls, we went to, 3,200 calls for service last year, various things. So it's right. You want to cut that out, you want to, questions are going to be answered.
Yeah, and some of the calls that I know you respond to, sometimes I just sit and shake my head over the calls you receive for the kinds of things that you receive.
Right. But over the years is what this community has demanded.
No, and I just think we have to reevaluate of that.
Sure.
You know, I'm not going to call security because teenagers ring my doorbell and run off, but it happens all the time.
Daily, probably.
You know,
there's serious ones that we go to. We had a shooting here.
No, exactly.
You weren't at the security meeting, but we had a shoplifting over here.
Right.
With teenagers acting up. So yeah, a lot of times we do. We're at the right place, and we're able to resolve this.
And it may be ultimately those, if we have expanded beyond our legally obligated scope, it may be that those other services are de minimis, and that there's not enough to make a difference in additional revenue to affect staffing. But I think we should be looking at those as Director Pohl says, we run at this minimum, so we have this minimum shortfall, and then are there ways that we could enhance revenue?
I have a wish list, and so one of the things when we get to the meeting, one of the things I'm going to ask for is if we're going to get rid of our part-time gate officers, then maybe the compliance officers can come fill in for us and fill in something like that. So those are things. I have this wish list, depending where it goes, but that's something that could be looked at too.
But I mean, it's certainly arguable that we should not spend beyond the money that Measure J brings in, unless we have some additional sources of revenue. I mean, it makes sense.
Or give us a percentage of our time there.
Right, exactly. Yeah, okay. As long as we're having that discussion, I think it's critical. It's too bad we didn't have that discussion this time last year before Measure R did go on the ballot, because it may have altered some of that outcome. I don't know if it would have or not, but it may have.
I have a question for you, Kelly. For you, what would be the difference between scenario 3 and scenario 4? Like what would the CSD, how would we
12.
Maintain if scenario 4 was selected?
Well, you can keep your gates fully staffed, what do you want to control? Even if you're doing minimum with three people, that's not enough to go 24 hours, 7 days a week. So that's a part-time security force you have right there. And then it depends where you want to go with it. What's the expectations? Like I said, 3,200 calls last year. You know, that they're going to start noticing we're not there anymore. And is the main goal to keep the gates open at whatever cost? Is that the goal? And if you don't have enough for vacation relief and sick time, now you're going to go into overtime. And then you start affecting their morale because they're doing 12-hour shifts all the time. Yeah. So it's a slippery slope. You're very, even at Measure R had passed, I didn't think it was good enough. I think we needed the one above it. So you have an extra patrol to fill in for the vacation relief stuff because their overtime's crazy, at least before. And we've reduced, we had several people from ABA when I first started, and we've reduced that to just having one now. We've got a solid gate with Mike's leadership and his board's packages that they approved for us, better pay, their benefits. We now have a strong, healthy gate. Turnover is very low on those gates. So as we saw during the storm, they came forward and came to work. So just what's the priority? Is it just the gates, and or is it do you want some kind of a security patrol with the gates? We're just waiting for what's the priority and what do you want?
Well, and then there's also an additional discussion point that is premature to hold now, but if all the proposed development occurs over the next, I don't know, whatever period of time, but, years, whatever, a lot of talk about the need then to open the Stonehouse Gate, or, and what would the cost of staffing that to be, and whether the new property tax assessments raised through Measure J, I said it wrong, but the Measure J funding on the new properties that were developed, would that raise enough revenue to provide staffing for a third gate? I mean, I think those are looking forward discussion points we're going to have to have.
And I just told Tim this morning, where you're growing. You're asking for a community, a young family, more teenagers coming in. You're putting a mini mall over here, and yet you're shrinking your security force. Something's got to give somewhere. Because remember, your sheriff's department is 30 to 40 minutes for them to get out here, and half the time they won't come for the quality of life issues that you have out here. So it's just, I need a redefining mission from the board of what kind of services do you want.
Do we have any agreements outside the gates like we have with RMA for doing certain things during patrol time?
The only other one, no. With all the other HOAs, no, we do not.
And the commercial?
No, just the original, original J. Nothing special like what we have with RMA.
They don't ask you to check their door every night?
No.
No, but no, we do have, when I said those checks, half are in that site. So that includes the hotel, the post office, the village.
You mean doing a loop?
Of certain check marks they have to mark on the computer.
Oh.
Yeah, so, like we have to go to 30 locations outside the gate, and there's like 34 on the inside of the gate that we provide security control for.
I see. Okay.
There's nothing in there that says.
And as I read Measure J, and because the district community outside the gates are paying the Measure J funding, we are obligated to provide that patrol. And of course, that area is growing and expanding. And so there is obviously an impact on patrol officer time and demands, and also the number of calls. I mean, I read the security log in the RVT last night, and alarms going off. And, we have more commercial businesses, more opportunity for a false alarm or a valid alarm. And there's no doubt that we're obligated to provide the patrol within the entire perimeter of the district.
And I have to say this again with my past in law enforcement. There's no, a lot of times there's no tangible results to show you.
Right.
You have two or three patrol options. What crime did you prevent? That number's obtainable, but it does make a difference. Like I said, there's no tangible numbers. This is how many crimes we've prevented at night driving around. That number's just not there.
Except conversely, those cities throughout the country that decided to reduce funding for police, our neighbors in San Francisco, another one I just read about back east someplace, are seeing exponential increase in crime with the reduction of law enforcement officers on the street.
Shocking.
So we know the opposite can be proven.
Right.
But you're right, it's hard to prove the prevention.
Right.
The city of Sacramento's dealing with, they're looking at high crime rates in three specific parts of the city and trying to figure out what they can do to try to help prevent that increase in crime, and that's a much more daunting task.
Right. It's a question of problem.
Richard?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, I believe that the village does have an agreement for the security to lock up the clubhouse every night.
That's correct. That's our internal, and then when we can't make it, we have your, I think, I forgot what's in the Randy case.
Okay. Yeah. So there is.
So is there an agreement?
It's not
that's contractual? Is it a contractual agreement or just something that we do as a courtesy?
It's in our Army, it's in our operations manual that we do that. And I don't know the words of that, but it's always something we do as a courtesy. But it's not a specific special MOU like we have with the Army.
Well, I don't know. I was under the impression there actually was an agreement and the village pays for it. I could be wrong, but that's my understanding.
No, we do it.
Okay.
We do that. We lock up the post office at night, bathrooms at night.
The parks.
Parks.
I mean, I don't know if that's cumulatively enough time to make a difference if we were to enter into MOUs with those other entities to provide those services, but I think it's worth exploring.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
We're going to charge actual costs.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Back to the agenda, Martin?
No, we need some direction, I think.
Oh, yeah, very good.
I guess the question is to Steve. Stephen, have you agreeable to that $50,000 deficit as a starting point?
I have no trouble supporting that as a recommendation to the board as a starting point, mm-hmm. pending the other discussion points that I've raised to see if we can do something better. Mm-hmm. But I think if the goal is to live as, I mean, obviously that's a significant reduction from the money we've been receiving or transferring from property taxes. So mm-hmm. I think out of the blocks, it's a reasonable approach. Yeah, I can support that as a recommendation.
Okay. Does anybody have any suggestions or comments that they want to discuss?
So, Kelly, you understand we're looking at kind of a hybrid between scenario
three and four.
I don't know what that looks like, but somewhere between expending $134,000 more than you have versus and having $18,000, you know, additional funds, somewhere in between there at $50,000. What is that, back that up to what does that look like in terms of your staffing scenario?
Mm-hmm. See, I worry about the layoff thing, so. Yeah, that's what you're saying. So,
I
need to really study that if that's where we're going.
No, I certainly would prefer to avoid layoff of current employees, if at all possible, but if we can't fund the department, you know, within $50,000 overrun, that may have to be discussed.
I think one of the tricky things might be, you know, employees are integer values, and so we have to figure out how, you know, to get to that $50,000 mark. So that'll have to put our thinking caps on that one.
Well, and maybe it ends up being scenario four with some money for overtime or coverage, which you don't have now. I mean, I just an option that you might consider.
It's pretty close to where we're at as far as staffing.
I think so.
With the exception of the two part-time gate officer.
So these numbers include me?
Yes.
No, easy.
And if there are other revenue options, you know, certainly we need to revisit the RMA. I can say that the RMA contract allows us $300 a month in payment, and they're only paying us $175 of that. So.
Actually, it allows us $350, if I recall correctly. $35 an hour for 10 hours.
Yes, you're correct. $350.
So we're
receiving half of that.
That doesn't bridge the $70,000 gap between.
But every
little bit helps.
And that's not enough, probably, to cover the expense of the time.
Correct.
And then, so we revisit what's the current cost of 10 hours worth of officer time, and then these other things that maybe. We could be assessing a charge for, or transferring responsibility to other entities. Mm-hmm. Let the feds lock up the post office.
I had a question, Paul. yeah, right.
Yeah.
Does this contain like some kind of overtime assumptions?
It does include overtime assumptions, yes.
Okay, so we could also say...
But it's very minimalistic in that.
No overtime for patrol, you know, and we just do what we can with what we have.
Well, I could say if you were to bring us down to 11 people, you'd only have two on patrol, kind of like a Andy and Barney kind of procedure, and that's it.
Oh, I'm talking about trying to keep the 13, but try to hit that 50,000. Like, how would we do that?
Yeah.
So I have some ideas. We can talk offline about that.
We'll have to come up with some creative creative ways.
But it sounds like we have a clear path forward.
So I don't remember the numbers, Kelly, but how many patrol shifts on average are running vacant?
I have it right here. For this month, we had 90 available patrol shifts available to cover, and we only covered 53, and that's with three officers. So if you were to take two officers from that, you're going to get another problem.
And some of that lack of coverage is due to sick leave, vacation?
No, because we're down two officers. Okay. Hard hiring for you, so I haven't been able to replace them.
Okay, all right.
So I really got to come down to it.
Okay, anybody else have anything? If not, we're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.